Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
I have a feeling it's going to be beautiful.
Well, hi there, and welcome to the Tawonga Institute's continuing training for summer camp professionals about preparing for a safe and successful summer camp season. We're sponsored by the Foundation for Jewish Camp, where Jewish summers make a Jewish future. I'm Steve Gershick, and in studio today is Ken Kramars, longtime executive director of Camp Tawonga, based in San Francisco and operating in Yosemite National Park, along with Robin Parvin, emergency preparedness liaison for the Sausalito Sustainability Commission, right here in the Bay Area. And Robin, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be with you again. We'd also like to remind everyone that this series is meant to get you started in incident preparedness. This is not a substitute for complete training in the incident command system, legal advice, or other professional guidance. Today we are talking about setting up your incident command post. Ken, what is an incident command post?
The incident command post, or ICP, this is the place that is a quiet, dedicated space where important decisions are being made, plans are being crafted, after-action reviews are being handled.
When I worked on the ropes course, our incident command post was just a little shack where there was some running water. That's about it. What is an incident command post for you?
Well, it could start with that, but it has to have some other things as well. It's got to be most likely available in the case of an incident. So out here in the Bay Area, we're concerned with earthquakes. So we want to make sure that the incident command post was located in an earthquake-proof location. It has to be away from the noise and activity. Some people get confused between what the incident command post is and what your evacuation site is. Your evacuation site is with your gathering place for campers and staff in case of, let's say, a fire drill or other kind of evacuation. And this is something completely different. This is a smaller space about the size of an office in which the commander and the command team is going to gather to assess the incident and make plans. So it's got to be away from all of that. Got to have natural light because lots of times you're going to have a power failure that's associated with these incidents. So you want to have windows with natural light. And
do you have more than one place in mind and you don't know where this incident will happen?
That's right. And the first one could be either inaccessible and or disabled in some way. You can't get to it. So you want to have a backup choice. So there's a first and second choice in terms of indoor incident command posts, and then a third choice, an outdoor spot where you can get to and also conduct the business of command.
What do you have at the incident command post?
Okay, there's a lot of equipment that you could have, and I want to give you some ideas. This is not really like a comprehensive or exhaustive list, but I think it's a great place to start. So I'm going to start with walkie-talkies. Walkie-talkies are handheld devices that are not reliant on any other kind of extrinsic infrastructure. They don't require cell phone towers. They don't require repeater systems. They are your own frequencies that speak one station to the next. You're going to have to spend some money on those, maybe $500, $600 a unit, but they're worth it.
That's important. You want to have good communication.
Yeah. And I'm not going to promote any particular product. We happen to use Motorola. They make a very robust product, and they've never failed us. So we want to get good, solid walkie-talkies, minimum of four, because we have the commander and three section chiefs. You want them at least networked together by radios. That's the first thing you have at your command post. Second thing is you want some headlamps and batteries. I love the headlamp. You know, flashlight takes up one of your hands. That's 50% of your hands. So headlamp, much better. Backup batteries, essential. Next thing you need at your incident command post is hard copies of key data. You'll notice that in our thinking, we're always planning for a worst-case scenario where there's no power, there's no access to the cloud, you can't even get to your own computer or your own cell phone. So key essential data is located at the incident command post.
What kind of data are you talking about here? These are like phone numbers of your board, members of the community. What else do you print out?
Well, we like to print out the things that we talked about in our first podcast when we talked about gathering the neighbors and your emergency responders to camp. So your inside backdoor access to your neighbors, Forest Service if you're in forest property, sheriff, police, fire, park rangers, and so forth. You want your best backdoor information there. That's printed out, laminated, and at the incident command post. I should say at all of the incident command posts. And there could also be your insurance company information, your president, board president's information, anybody who need to contact in the case of emergency that you, and you don't want to rely on any kind of electronic resource.
What else would you keep at the incident command posts?
Well, in that binder, we want to have what we call situational guidelines. So in advance, every camp knows the things that are most likely to happen at their place. Okay, it could be a power failure or a water failure or an intruder or whatever it happens to be. And for each one of the things, you want a sort of a one-page tip sheet that lists out the highlights or the kind of guidelines of what has to be done in response to that kind of an incident. It doesn't tell you who exactly is going to do what. That's the job of the commander in the incident to decide who will do each of the things in the guideline. But you want some advanced research done of how do you evacuate, how do you get backup food, and have those one-pagers in a binder. We like to put in a red binder, just easy to grab off the shelf.
Great. What else would you keep at the incident command post?
Got to have a whiteboard, you know, with dry erase markers.
You actually, we have a photo of that whiteboard as one of the podcast resources.
Great. And when you look at that, what you're going to see is the basic organizational structure of incident command. That's the commander and the three section chiefs. The name of the incident, the time it began, and any other key data. The reason we do that is during an incident, it's a really busy time, and people are moving in and out of the command post. They have questions. They've just arrived in the scene. You don't want to have the commander or any section chief stop what they're doing just to explain what's going on. The whiteboard is a place where everybody knows you can look, and you can see, okay, that's what's going on. Time, data, who's involved, and who's responding. In addition, you need ordinary things like desk and chair, table for meetings. And at Camp Tawanga, we have our incident playbook.
Incident playbook. What is an incident playbook?
Well, Tawanga's incident playbook is a 16-page step-by-step guide of how to go through an incident and becomes the permanent contemporaneous record of what happened and how you responded. But that's really the subject of a much more intensive training. That would probably take a day or two of on-site training to go over. But I just want to let you know that at our command post, there is a stack of blank playbooks. Those are for the commander to use.
So this command post, is this a dedicated space that's used only for incidents? Or do you repurpose other spaces in your...
You could go either way. In our case, the main office suite, which is on the second floor of our office building, and it's one of those large open space with maybe 10 desks in it. We designate a corner of that as the incident command post, and it has a desk that's dedicated to that. That's the only thing it's used for, and all the equipment is kept there. The rest of the space gets repurposed to the incident when one arises.
What should a camp director do now?
All right, there's a few things you can do right now before the camp season starts. The first thing is look at your site and decide what is the very best first choice for an incident command post. Then you want to have a backup location. And as I said before, you want to have a third spot designated in advance that's outdoors.
Who knows about these locations?
Everybody has to know about these locations. Every staff person has to know this is where you report in the case of an incident. Now, you might have a different method of signaling them at each camp. We use our radios because at any one time, we probably have 20 or 30 people on walkie-talkies. And we have a code that lets them know they need to report immediately to the incident command post. Some camps might use a PA system or word of mouth. The point is, everybody has to know when an incident occurs, this is where you go first.
Okay, what do they do next?
They have to make sure that they have a dedicated phone line at their incident command posts.
And a phone, of course.
And the phone equipment itself. Now, these line-powered phones are wonderful for a couple of reasons. First of all, the copper wires that lead to them have their own power. So even if there's a general power failure and your computer systems aren't working that run your telephone system, this dedicated line probably will still work. The second thing is, in most jurisdictions, when you place a call from a landline, the other side, whether it's the police or fire department or 911, they know exactly where you are. And that's not true for cell phones yet. We don't have that technology. But from a landline, they know exactly where you are. In addition, when you call your power company, let's say in the event of a power failure, they know your location from the landline you're calling at. And finally, you want to compile your situational guidelines now. You don't have to figure out, you know, every single step you're going to do, but for the major incidents that you're most likely to happen, whether it's an auto incident or a pool incident or a power failure or a firestorm or a thunderstorm, but the kinds of things that might happen at your location, you want those one pagers written in advance so that in the moment of an incident, you can pull that red binder off the shelf and at least have a starting place.
Thank you, Ken, for those steps on setting up the incident command post. Now, camp directors, listen to podcast 4 for the key roles in incident command system.
Well, that about wraps it up for this episode. Thank you, Ken and Robin, and thanks again to our sponsor, the Foundation for Jewish Camp.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Ken, and everyone listening.
Thanks, guys. And listen, camp directors out there, it's going to be an awesome summer. It's going to be safe and successful, and everything's going to be all right.